sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Criticism.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Losers.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall. I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Cartagena.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
You fill in the mortar. I raise the wall. And I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by my co-host Gord Barnes and our special guest Dana Fulkerson, Executive Director of the Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger. Welcome, Dana.
Thank you.
And Gord.
Thanks, Jim.
Nice to have you back here.
Yeah, it's good. Nice sunny day. It's really good to be out.
It could be a little warmer, but we'll take it.
Yep. So it's progress, and I think you were at the very beginning of our program this week going to do a little plug for...
Oh, yes, we got to talk about the Look and Listen Lottery.
Right.
For sure.
So you've got all the details.
I have all the details here, and this is an important fundraiser for CJTR. And, you know, we need money to improve things. We've got a new studio that we've built as a result of fundraising we've done in the past year, and there are other upgrades that we want to be able to do. So I'll tell you all about the contest here now. Our grand prize, once again, is a great trip for two to New York City, with return airfare for two, four-star hotel for three nights, Broadway show tickets and Mets or Yankees baseball tickets, tickets for Kramer's Seinfeld reality tour, and $1,000 cash to spend any way you want. Our second prize is a $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Wagner Rickert Travel. And third prize is a weekend getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Memorial Spa. Got to get these glasses changed here. Mineral Spa. Courtesy of Casinos Regina and Moose Jaw, you get a two-night stay and $100 spending money. Now, the tickets are only $20 each, but there's only 1,200 available, so you get a real good chance of winning there. The draw date is May 3rd of this year, of course. And the tickets can be purchased at CJTR's offices right here at 1102 8th Avenue or by calling the radio station at 525-7274 during regular office hours, Monday through Friday. And if you want to pay by credit card, you can order tickets at Look and Listen Lottery at cjtr.ca, or, as I said before, call the station. For more information about the rules of play or prizes, go to www.cjtr.ca. So I think tickets are going well. I know
certain people have been coming back for books and coming back from books, and I'm amazed at how well the tickets are going. So you might not have a lot of time to buy your ticket. Buying them sooner rather than later would be a good idea.
I think good plan.
Yeah. So a trip to New York City sounds pretty good to me.
That'd be fabulous to win that one. Yeah. So, Jim and Dana, welcome to the program. And for our listeners, we thought this week it would be an opportunity to kind of talk about a different area of our human rights work, and that is around concerns with respect to economic, social, and cultural rights, and specifically with our guest and her expertise around food security issues. So welcome again, Dana. I know you're the executive director of REACH, the Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger. I have long admired REACH and your work. But for the benefit of the people who are listening who might not be familiar, would you like to kind of talk about what REACH is all about and the kind of work you undertake?
I certainly will. And as we talked before, I'll talk about REACH, and we'll start at the local level, move to a provincial level, and then talk more nationally about food security. REACH has been around in Regina since 1989, and it started off as an umbrella organization to support breakfast and lunch programs. And, of course, the fact that there were breakfast and lunch programs was an indication that there was an issue with child hunger. At the time, there were two studies done, one by the U of R and one by the City of Regina, that indicated that children in Regina were susceptible to hunger much more so than a lot of other places in the province. Now, they never ever did really say why, just that it was existing at that time. So that's how we started out. We do and still do get funding from the provincial government to help support those programs. Currently, it's through the Ministry of Education. And what we do is we support 17 other organizations and schools for breakfast and lunch programs. But that is just one pillar of what we do. So we have our child nutrition pillar. Then we have our what we call our food security or food provision area. And then we have another area, our educational area. In the food provision area, we currently run 10 mobile stores. And these mobile stores, five of them go into low-income seniors' high-rises, and five of them go into neighborhoods that do not have grocery stores anymore. And they happen to be low-income neighborhoods also. So we go into these 10 locations once a week, anywhere from a half an hour to 3 hours, depending on the store. We bring in fresh fruits and vegetables. We bring in baking, breads, that type of thing. We bring in dairy. What we also do is we run something called a buying co-op, but it's not your typical buying co-op. This is a buying co-op for the organizations that we partner with. So we have 37 organizations that belong to that. Some of the women's shelters, again, some of those breakfast and lunch programs. There are a number of organizations who are providing some type of food service to their clients or customers. What we do is we buy between three-quarters and $1 million worth of food a year.
So we're able. That's a lot of food.
Yeah, that's a lot of food. And what we're able to do because of that is that we can keep the costs down. So we don't, other than in the child nutrition programs, we do not give our food away. Our participants are customers. Mm-hmm. They buy the food. They make the choice to do that. We do have one program called the Family Basket. It's the only program we have that you have to be on social assistance. Mm-hmm. But again, those individuals choose, and I say this very clearly, they choose to buy that food. It's a good deal. It's for $30, you get 50 pounds of food, and we also do home delivery. So if you're that single mom who has no transportation, it's on a very limited budget because you're on social assistance, this is one way to ensure that you have food on the table for your children. We we're always partnering and leveraging our dollars. So we partner with Street Culture Youth. They're our courier drivers, so they
really?
Deliver our our baskets. And we have another program. Again, it's a food provision program. And this one specifically, or it's targeted at seniors. I shouldn't say it specifically because anyone can buy this food. But we provide frozen meals. And we have 26 frozen meals that individuals can buy that all fit within the diabetic diet. And we're also able to get any specialty diets. Most of our customers are seniors, so they're able to buy these frozen meals, but they can also buy fresh fruits and vegetables. Again, breads, dairy, eggs, they can buy all of these things, and we deliver. And again, the Street Culture Youth is our courier drivers. Mm-hmm. And we do about 20,000 of those meals a year. And that's just the frozen meals, not counting the fresh fruits and vegetables. And those are 99% of our customers in this program are seniors. And again, it's seniors who are living in their own homes or hoping to stay in their homes as long as they can. Mm-hmm. Most of them have some kind of compromised physical, you know, disabilities, and this enables them to eat properly and to stay in their homes longer. But we do have people who are recuperating from surgery, and there's all kinds of reasons why people also buy those meals. Now, as I mentioned, we have the child nutrition programs. We have all of these provision programs. Well, we learned really early on that nowadays there's a lot of people that don't know how to cook. And the food that we provide, except for those frozen meals, mm-hmm. the food that we provide is a very basic food, mm-hmm. and you need to know how to cook. And so we started long ago working with some of the daycares in the inner city. Mm-hmm. And I know people will be aghast, but kids as young as 3 and 4 and 5 are making meals mm-hmm. for their siblings. And so we teach children how to make healthy snacks, but how to mm-hmm. how to work within the kitchen right. and to be able to use the utensils and do different things like that. But we also teach, we partner everything we do, we partner with somebody else. So we work with a lot of other organizations, and we teach cooking classes to all ages, all throughout, mostly in the inner city mm-hmm. and mostly to people who have lots of challenges. And we also run community kitchens. And community kitchens, the concept of a community kitchen is where you collectively pool your resources, they buy your food collectively, and then you cook a number of meals and you take them home. So we're kind of across that whole food security scale.
Yeah. Right.
So is the you mentioned the family basket, mm-hmm. Dana. Is that the same thing as what I used to hear people talk about, the good food box?
Okay, the good food box. Thank you. I missed that one. Thank you very much. The good food box is one of sort of the core program that we have. We have 40 locations throughout the city. We partner with schools and businesses and other nonprofits. And we also work with 6 of the reserves around Regina. The concept of the good food box is it's fresh fruits and vegetables. We have expanded that program a little bit, and we do have some add-on. So you can buy a pantry pack that has bread and eggs and some things in it. And we also have a breakfast box that you can buy. The idea of this is to get, again, into neighborhoods that don't necessarily have a grocery store or have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. It's also, the idea is that the people that are struggling, low-income people, are able to, again, be able to buy a quantity of fresh fruits and vegetables at a low cost. The other thing, though, has happened to us over the last few years, and everybody's quite aware of this, obesity being such an issue, and good nutrition, that it crosses all economic mm-hmm. Levels.
Right.
So we really promote the good food box for everyone, everywhere, and I promote it personally as it's not unlike the little boy that comes to the door and selling the chocolate bars. Mm-hmm. If you buy the good food box from us, you're supporting our program by keeping the costs down to make it available to everybody, but you're also getting more fresh fruits and vegetables into your home and encouraging your children to eat better. So that is a keystone of everything we do, is really from the good food box. And as I had mentioned, the family basket before, that was an offshoot of the good food box.
Right.
It was sort of a special type of box that we did specially for individuals on social assistance. But the good food box is for everyone.
The good food box, if I'm not mistaken, you have to order that in advance.
Yes. The way it works is you order it 1 week and pay for it, and then we deliver it to that location next week. And we do one half the city 1 week and one half the city the other week.
Mm-hmm. So the idea then is you could arrange to pick up the good food box maybe every second week at some kind of community center or church or whatever
school.
In your neighborhood. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that is the idea.
Yeah. And what's happened in terms of the volume with the good food box over the years? Has there been sort of ups and downs around that, or how is that going?
Yes, definitely. There definitely is ups and downs. And one of the things with the good food box is, and with the family basket, is the hope is really that we would be going down.
Mm-hmm.
But we go up and we go down. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're up. We're up with the good food box, we're up with our seniors' meals, and we're up with the family basket. And part of that, and a lot of the information that you'll see sort of indicates to those people struggling, those individuals struggling, those individuals on social assistance are falling further behind. And there is a gap. But we're finding more middle-income, low-income people also accessing our services than in the past.
So the gap is widening.
The gap is widening. It's getting wider, and we see it. And the food bank's numbers have gone up, and right now we're seeing more seniors accessing the food bank, more seniors assessing our programs. So we're actually in a process with the university and the food bank and ourselves, sort of looking at the whole seniors issue. But we're pretty sure, and we know from the seniors we talk to, rent is certainly the impact. They're seeing their rents, and there's been some things in the news just this week.
70%.
Yeah. And the only place for most people for rent increases comes from their food dollars, usually, because a lot of people don't even have discretionary dollars anymore in that low to middle income, and so we're seeing the pressure.
I'm just wondering if you could hazard a guess. I'm just curious about this, about the time frame we're talking about here. Over what period? You said it's been down and it's been up. Over what period of time has it been going up, as far as usage of your services?
I would say the last 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 18 months to 2 years, yeah. But we go up and down. That's certainly been, and that's not a bad thing, because our goal is you shouldn't need to use us. So if we can, some people are, some of our customers have certainly done better, and so they move on and they're shopping at the grocery stores and the farmers market and are quite able to and don't need us. And that's great. That's what we'd like everybody to be able to do.
Yeah.
But we also know the reality of that for many people.
So in terms of your buying food, Dana, for reach purposes, are you able to kind of speak to the source of food in terms of fresh fruits and vegetables? I know, I mean, we're not growing lots of fruit here in Saskatchewan, but other kinds of food, are you able to source some food from Saskatchewan producers?
We are able to source some, not as much as we'd like to, and we're hoping, over time to be able to grow that. Cost is an issue for us. The suppliers that we work with do try to get local, you know, potatoes and some of those things for us. We do all of our eggs, we do buy locally. We buy from a Hutterite colony that's close to here. So all of our eggs are bought there. And we do attempt to, but, we, you know, the majority at this point is not local.
I was just going to mention, I know I'm a member of the Unitarian Fellowship here in town, and at the end of the growing season last year, there was a farmer in the valley there by...
up by Lumsden.
Lumsden, yeah. My brain wasn't working there. Anyway, they had, you know, they had produce that was not going to be sold because just because of the weather, and they had overproduction. So we managed to get out there and collect a large part of that and donate it.
Wow, that's good.
So it was a good project.
Yeah.
So and does REACH? Actually, before I move to that question, maybe Dana, you should take the opportunity to just let people know how they can be in touch with REACH if somebody's listening to the program today and wanted to access one of the programs, either something like the Family Basket or the Good Food Box or one of the other programs. How do they contact you?
Okay, they can contact us at 306-347-3224. Or if they have internet access, we're at www.reachinregina.ca.
Okay. And I'm just wondering, I know there's in different neighborhoods a number of community gardens, and do you have any kind of connection to that in terms of their work?
Okay. The community gardens are, there's a number of different ways the community gardens, so some of the community associations manage community gardens and they have a number of plots, and then there's the Community Garden Association. What we do is through our classes and through some of our programs, we promote those gardens. So we don't run any gardens ourselves, but we're definitely advocates of it. And I know our educational coordinator takes the kids from many of her programs, and they go and they work in the garden so that they're familiar with that, and we promote it. We do newsletters in our Family Baskets and our Good Food Boxes, so we promote the community gardens that way. So we haven't specifically, now I have, which is very ironic, but yesterday I was approached by one of the community associations that has some garden plots to look at, sort of possibly developing some kind of program with that. So we may do something like that, again, in partnership with another organization, but that's how we've worked that in the past.
Great. And, you know, maybe it's a good time to kind of move on then to your own role with what I believe is called Food Security Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Food Secure Saskatchewan. So now, just as the gentlemen here are here in in a work quasi-volunteer role, Volunteer Saskatchewan is, Food Secure Saskatchewan is a volunteer network of people in Saskatchewan who work in food security, who are concerned about food security, who are nutritionists, who are moms or dads, whatever the aspect is, producers. We have quite an eclectic crew that are part of Food Secure Saskatchewan. We are a network. We're volunteers. I happen to be a co-chair of the organization right now. The whole sole reason for our existence is coordination of issues, possibly some policy, to be a representative of the organizations across the province, sometimes when government wants a collective group to look at an issue or whatever. So that's our goal at this point in time. We don't have any hired staff or that kind of stuff. We also have a website, and if you just Google Food Secure Saskatchewan, it'll come up. And on that website, we have a lot of information, everything from how to set up a community garden to, you know, a variety of different things, the different programs across the province, and contact people and that kind of thing.
So there's an organization in Saskatoon that's comparable to REACH that probably participates, and that would be what organization?
CHEP.
Okay. And is there one in Moose Jaw?
Not there is, Moose Jaw has had an organization, right, and I believe it's connected with the Moose Jaw Food Bank.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, there is connections like that. And if you go on the website, we do list all the members.
Oh, good.
So, again, you can make those contacts.
Great. So I think, you know, probably we're coming up close to the break, and after the break, we'd like to talk about a recent UN report that talks about food security issues in Canada. And is that a good
time? I think that would be a good idea. And so we're going to take a break here now, and we'd like to have a little bit of music after the break. So this week, I think we're going to pay tribute to a great Canadian, Stompin' Tom Connors.
Good choice.
And we'll let you guess what the food song that we're going to have from Stompin' Tom.
From Prince Edward Island on the east coast of Canada to Hamilton Place in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. It's Bud the Spud from the bright red mud, rolling down the highway smiling. The spuds are big on the back of Bud's rig. The from Prince Edward Island, the from Prince Edward Island. From Charlottetown or from Summerside, they load him down for the big long ride. He jumps in the cab and he's off with the brides of Eagles. He's gotta catch the boat to make Clementine. He hits up that old New Brunswick line. To Montreal he comes just a flying whatever big load of potatoes. It's Bud the Spud from the bright red mud, rolling on a highway smiling. The spuds are big on the back of Bud's rig. The from Prince Edward Island, the from Prince Edward Island. The Ontario Provincial Police don't think much of Bud. And the cops have been looking for the son of a gun that's been ripping the tar off the 401. They know the name on the truck signs up in the sun. Green Gables. But he hits Toronto when it's 7 o'clock. He backs her up again the terminal dock. And the boys gather round just to hear him talk about another big load of potatoes. It's Bud the Spud from the bright red mud, rolling on the highway smiling. The spuds are big on the back of Bud's rig. The from Prince Edward Island, the from Prince Edward Island. Take her away, Vice. Now I know a lot of people from east to west that like the spuds from the island best, because they'll stand up to the hardest test. Bread on the table. So when you see that big trucker rolling by, wave your hand or kind of wink your eye, cause that's Bud the Spud from old P.I. Water, big load of potatoes. It's Bud the Spud from the bright red mud, going on a highway smiling. Because he's got another big load. The best doggone potatoes that's ever been growed. And they're from Prince Edward Island. From Prince Edward Island.
And there he goes, Stompin' Tom. He was 77 years old and passed away last Wednesday, unfortunately. So I think everybody knows most of the words to that, Gord. I think, were you singing along there?
Yeah.
I'm far too young to do that.
We'll miss him, that's for sure.
Good choice for this week's program, Jim. Thanks for picking that one. So, you know, we were talking before the break with Dana Fulkerson, who's the Executive Director of REACH, Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger, about the work around food security issues that her organization takes, and a little bit about the role you've got with respect to food security Saskatchewan. And I thought now it would be worth turning ourselves to a discussion around the report that was officially presented at the United Nations in Geneva on Monday, March 4th. It's very current. And I understand, Dana, you were able to actually kind of participate long distance with a lot of people here in Regina through a webinar. So do you want to speak to that a little bit in terms of what went on and some of the history with the report?
Okay, I certainly will. And just to put a little bit in context, too, I sit on sort of two national committees, one on child nutrition and the child nutrition programs across Canada, and the other one is Food Secure Saskatchewan. I'm a provincial rep to, sorry, Food Secure Canada. As co-chair of Food Secure Saskatchewan, I'm involved with that too. So both of those groups allow me to know what's happening in other provinces and to have more of a national perspective. Because sometimes in your being a nonprofit in your busy little world, you can get very isolated to what the bigger issues are. So these allow me to stay kind of in contact with people from all across Canada, north, south, east, west, and know, you know, the issues they're facing and how they're solving some of them and those types of things. So back in last May, the rapporteur from the UN came to Canada, and there were he had meetings across the country. Unfortunately, he was limited in his time frame that he was here, so he didn't come to Saskatchewan, but he was in Alberta, and he was in northern Manitoba. He was, of course, in Ontario. He was in the territories. So this is quite normal for individuals like this to come into the country and do an assessment. And his expertise is in food security. And so he came, he did the assessment, and got actually a lot of controversy from our government about what the issues were in Canada. Unfortunately, for those of us on the ground working, I don't think there were any of these issues that we weren't aware of. And or we're working on, you know, trying to sort of solve or bridge the gap, I guess would be a better word. So after this was done, he left the country and he does up the report. So his report was actually presented on Monday, and fortunately, Food Secure Canada was able to secure 50 feeds to the UN. Now, unfortunately, we didn't see him actually present the report to the UN, but we were able to, afterwards, he gave a summary of it and then was able to take questions from individuals across the country. In the end, they had 49 locations. Every province, every territory was representative by one of those locations, and of course some. To my knowledge, there were two locations in Saskatchewan. Saskatoon hosted one, and we, along with United Way as a partner, hosted the other one in Saskatchewan. And we had 45 organizations represented at the one here.
So I guess that, you know, it's kind of an interesting piece in that really he is an expert around food security issues, and also it really connects the dots in terms of he is an expert around human rights issues. And
that's right.
What I think is important to remember around the whole discussion around food security is it's a fundamental human right in terms of being able to access food. When we have somebody with his expertise visit Canada and undertake the kind of work he did, it's a kind of wake-up call that his recommendations need to be looked at pretty carefully and I guess even in a respectful way. But unfortunately, that wasn't the tone of it a year ago. And more recently, there hasn't really been an acknowledgement, unfortunately, by the federal government yet that this is an area of work that they need to really begin to focus on. But as I understand it, first of all, his name again, Dana, it's Olivier Deschutes, is that right?
Correct.
And he made a number of recommendations, and I guess what the federal government has said fairly recently is that they're going to take them under advisement, but not kind of embrace them yet. Is that a fair understanding?
I think that would be very fair.
Yeah. And do you anticipate, as a consequence of that, that, you know, the reaction, I know Amnesty International has expressed concern about the federal government's response, but do you anticipate other NGOs and the networks that you're involved with that you refer to will be doing sort of more advocacy at the federal level now?
Yes, definitely Food Secure Canada is and has had some success at being at the table with some pieces of sort of the food security issue, child nutrition being one, has actually been able to meet with the federal government at one point. But yes, definitely. Often, even though inherently we know that food security, and I'm talking from the grassroots organizations that are working in food security, inherently we know that food security is part of human rights, but often we're so busy that we don't step back and look at that issue in its context. And it is, you know, one of the things that in the report that they talk about is a national food security strategy that includes a national child nutrition program. We are one of the only industrial countries in the world that does not have a national child nutrition program. So those are pieces that, you know, there's great things happening across the country and in a lot of different areas, but we're disconnected. We're not tied together under one strategy. And I mean, there's two strategies that need to happen. One is an anti-poverty strategy. I mean, that's the crutch of all of this. And the other is a food security strategy that, you know, takes in a number of different things. So those, hopefully, you know, that the federal government and the provincial government and the NGOs, all of us have to take responsibility for this in some way of trying to collectively bring together what needs to be done in a strategy that works across the country. I'm not going to be any strategic type of person and say that it has to be done a certain way, and that a lot of provinces already have these strategies. Is there not a way that they can't be tied together into one, and those of us that don't yet have those could get on board? So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here. If we can all take our egos and set them aside and really look at the issue, that's what we really need to do.
Yeah, and food is really part of a larger poverty problem,
yeah,
you know, and income disparity, which is getting worse and worse over time, you know, the gap between people who have lots and the people that don't have enough.
And you were talking over the break, Dana, about the issues in terms of children and their inability to access nutritious food in terms of the consequence for obesity issues. And certainly there's significant, and I'm sure you're able to speak this better than I am, but significant impacts in terms of health income outcomes for our population if young people are not able to access nutritious food. And do you have the ability to kind of speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll do the best that I can. I mean, there's a lot of research done, so, you know, anybody can go out there and they can look on the internet. There's a lot of research now being done that, of course, diets early on, so right from, you know, breastfeeding when children are born, to healthy eating as toddlers and into school. The sooner that a person eats nutritiously, the longer they're going to live, and the healthier, and a lot of the diseases that they'll avoid. And diabetes is the big one. Right now, diabetes is showing up in younger and younger children and sooner and sooner. And it's not type 1, it's type 2. And that has to do with obesity. And I just came back from a conference in Saskatoon last week where I heard this term for the first time, but it's something that I've been trying to describe to people and they find it hard. And it's called the double bind. And it's the look of child nutrition or malnutrition and hunger is different than it used to be. And it's not the skinny little kid. It's the chubby, fat little child who is at risk of diabetes and all of these diseases because they're eating the chips and the pop And the reason they're eating the chips and the pop is that's what's available in their neighborhood.
Right.
In a lot of cases, if somebody has to carry the groceries a long ways, mm-hmm. those things are lighter. And so it just kind of perpetuates what's happening in our neighborhoods.
Yeah. Sometimes it's an education issue, though.
Oh,
too.
It's all of the all of it.
I mean, how many times have you been in the checkout line at a grocery store and you look at the cart ahead of you, and it's full of soft drinks and snack foods and all the rest of it, and you think, boy, that's really there aren't a lot of healthy choices there.
No.
And I guess that from the perspective of what the costs then are for our healthcare system mm-hmm. later on, this is really going to be staggering in terms of the implications if large numbers of people are at this point young but dealing with obesity issues or diabetes issues, and then later in their life struggling to get by. It's going to be very, very significant. And if we could possibly kind of shift some of the resources that are available back into food security issues and addressing poverty issues, it would be a very significant direction.
Mm-hmm. It's huge. And there's a number of studies have been done now, too, that show that, like, low-income individuals, because of all of these issues, also access the health care system quite a bit more than others. And so all of that stuff's there. I guess the other thing that I do want to say is, and currently, our provincial government is trying really hard to increase graduation levels for Aboriginal children and mm-hmm. for kids in this province in particular. And one of the things that children who eat nutritious breakfasts and lunches learn better.
Mm-hmm.
That's also very much documented.
Performance.
So, mm-hmm. If for nothing else, if we want to increase those graduation levels and then it will be healthier individuals is looking at that whole nutrition piece.
Mm-hmm. So do you see sort of some simple things that could be done from your perspective at the federal level that could bring this all together, or is it something that I know there's a report like this is going to be a pretty thick report for people to get through, right? And so are there some key things that really need to be looked at pretty quickly by the federal government from your perspective?
Definitely. One is food in the north, healthy food in the north is really expensive. And there are some programs that have been quasi-successful, mm-hmm. but they need to be ramped up and mm-hmm. they need to be better. So that's one of the areas. And one is a bit more monitoring of it, so that to ensure that, the subsidies are happening, those types of things. So that one's key. The other is a child nutrition program. We mm-hmm. really seriously need to look at it in this country and across the country. And there are lots of good things happening, but it's tying them together and mm-hmm. ensuring, again, that it's not just feeding kids, but it's also feeding kids right, the mm-hmm. nutrition, healthy. The other is local. We need to promote the local growers and the local access to food. We have lots of things happening for exports and mm-hmm. that kind of thing, but we need to bring it back. And again, it's not either or, mm-hmm. like that's, we tend to do this, mm-hmm. whether we're governments or we're the advocate on the other side or whatever, but we need to, work in those areas. The other thing is that every individual needs to take responsibility for this, and we need to, as I was saying in the break, I talked to many business people here in Regina who it's out of a lack of knowledge. It's not that they're blind or whatever, but because people are doing well, those that are doing well don't realize that the gap has got bigger and what it does to children. And children don't choose mm-hmm. these situations. They just happen to be in them. And I guess And I as an individual, but others, need to also realize that food security is part of a human right. Mm-hmm. It's a basic need, and somehow it's sort of got forgotten in, mm-hmm. in some of our discussions. I'm sure Amnesty is, you know, much more aware of that than, you know, some of the individuals. So that it needs to get back on the radar mm-hmm. that it is one of those issues.
It's interesting that, you know, it contrasts the kind of discussion that you've just helped us with, Dana, and then reflect on the response of the federal government a year ago when they were quite aggressive in terms of even attacking the integrity of the UN Special Rapporteur. I would personally hope that what happened a year ago when they were really attacking his integrity and even his credibility will change and the tone and will change as a result of the report that he's issued this week now and that there will be some really significant look at the recommendations he's made in his report and that people who are listening on the program will take an interest in terms of this whole discussion around food security as a human right. And you know, there's opportunity at times, we all have an opportunity at times to raise that whole discussion with our members of parliament. And that's another way people can contribute to making progress and conveying their opinions and raising it as a profile, higher profile issue than it might be right now. We didn't get a chance earlier in the first part of the program, but I'm wondering just in terms of your own work, I want to go back to Reach's work in the summertime, because you did talk about a significant role you've got relative to assisting school feeding programs. And you know, it's a real significant issue in terms of how kids make out in the summertime. And I know you've got some programs that you support, and you get some provincial government support, I believe, mm-hmm. for that. Do you want to speak to that a little bit as well?
Yes, we do get support, and we actually get private. We do have private donors that support. Actually, Potash Corp is one that also supports us for a summer lunch program. And what we do and have done for many, many years is we partner with the City of Regina, and it's called Play Escapes. It's their playground program. And we go to a number of different sites, and sadly, I must admit that that's also growing, that we're not just in North Central. We're in a number of neighborhoods where there are playground programs where we bring in lunches during the summer, because the reality is that when those schools stop serving lunches, the kids are still hungry. So
I wonder, would it be fair to say then that poverty is increasing in Regina?
You know what? I don't know that. And I the reason I'll say that is that, in fairness to neighborhoods like North Central, mm-hmm. there are people that are in poverty in every neighborhood mm-hmm. in Regina. And that is one of the reasons why, with the programs like the Good Food Box, mm-hmm. that we go throughout the city. So I'm not so sure that, you know, again, it's very hard, and I'll bring up another mm-hmm. issue. It's very hard to know
right.
Without one of the changes, and again, yeah. the rapporteur talks about it in his yeah. report, is not doing the complete census mm-hmm. now makes it very difficult mm-hmm. to know exactly some of that information. Mm-hmm. Before, we had access to that on a neighborhood basis. Now we're not, and so we, you know, yes, we personally think mm-hmm. that. Can I
right.
prove it right now?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. We have the stats.
But it could be an indicator.
Yeah, we have the stats from the food bank, and we certainly have our stats. But mm-hmm. To back it up with, say, Stats Canada information, mm-hmm. that is one of the issues.
Sure. No, they don't have it.
Yes, and as a nonprofit who's constantly being asked to prove it,
yeah.
it's very much more difficult for us to do that.
Mm-hmm. One significant stat that sort of pulls it back to the discussion around the costs relative to the healthcare system is that there's a report that indicates that it's costing us at least $5 billion annually in terms of healthcare costs and lost productivity due to obesity issues. That's just around that one aspect of the whole discussion. You know, and you think, well, there's some money there that is being spent in the healthcare system that really we could be, if we were focused around addressing food security issues, using to help people get by on a daily basis and access nutritious food and addressing some of those issues. So that's quite significant. Another one that, you know, really stands out for me is that the notion that there is actually over 800,000 households in Canada that are described as being food insecure. And that language people might not be familiar with, Dana, but you're probably able to describe what that means even with, given your work.
And that's the most food insecure, that number, 800,000. Mm-hmm. And that's people who don't know where their next meal is going to come from. That's people who, you know, parents may not eat that day because what mm-hmm. food they have they're giving to their kids. The number is higher even for individuals who maybe are eating but are not able to eat properly or mm-hmm. eat properly as often as they should be able to. The other thing is just to sort of piggyback on what Gord said, is eating healthy is quite cheap compared mm-hmm. to medical costs.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't have the numbers for that, but it's quite a lot less. I do have one stat that you mm-hmm. had asked about. In 2007, 2008, 7.7% of households experienced moderate or severe food insecurity, and that rose to 8.2% in 2011. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's gone up. And,
right.
And,
yeah. Well, yeah. I'd just like to make this is just my opinion.
Sure.
But as far as I'm concerned, it seems obvious from what I've seen over the last few years that enlightened social spending by government is going to pay huge dividends to taxpayers in the long run, because then we don't have these people accessing emergency services, emergency health, and that sort of thing. We'll tend to have people who are going to be able to look after themselves and their children.
So maybe before we end the program, we should give Dana another chance to just provide people with the contact information for REACH. And then, Jim, if you wanted to kind of, again, remind people about that lottery.
Okay.
So, Dana, the contact information for REACH, and I should say thank you so much for being on the program today. It was really a great discussion, and so glad you're able to take the time to be with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. So REACH is that you can call us at 306-347-3224, or you can go to our website, www.reachinregina.ca.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, and just our final reminder about our Look and Listen lottery. It's a trip for two to New York City as the grand prize, and a $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Wagenli Rickert Travel. The third prize is a weekend getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Mineral Spa. And the tickets are only $20 each. We only have 1,200 available. Our draw date is May 3rd, and you can get them here at the station. You can get them from CJTR programmers. You can call the office here or come down in person during regular office hours, Monday through Friday, and we'd be happy to sell you a ticket. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio and CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."